Welcome. So today we are going to enter into a very interesting part of the Dharma, which is Paticca-samuppada, or dependent origination. But before we start on that, we're going to have our little daily chat that we always start with. And today I have a very interesting, I think, topic which came up this week in a discussion I had with somebody when they were asking certain questions. And the questions were very similar to the question, Quinn, you asked last week about how do they do this in their daily life. Let's, for a moment, reflect upon Tiziana's question. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the group, but Tiziana posed a question to me privately on a chat. And I said, I think that'd be a great question for the group. Have you all read that, or should I review that question?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Tiziana posted onto our group, the Here and Now Sangha, a question she had after listening to the audio from last time.
Just listened to last recording. I can't stop to wonder, was it easier for the Buddha to let go of all he had just because he had it all? He had no heartily desires that could not be achieved considering he was a prince. He never developed the needing or the wanting desires.
Okay, so that's a pretty good question, don't you think?
Uh-huh. Yes.
I'm sure everyone who has ever encountered Buddhist teaching has asked that question to themselves. And so based on that question, I think we should start to understand and consider what the real direction of the Buddha Dhamma has been and how it has evolved slightly. Now that's a huge topic. We're not gonna talk about it extensively. We couldn't fit it into a whole month's work of discourses, but you may recall that I've mentioned, at least from my point of view, is that that's just a personal point of view. The Buddha was very clear and is very clear in the sutras that he's teaching the path to the ultimate realization of Nibbana, translated as extinguishing, meaning the extinguishing of all karma, the breakdown and eradication of exactly the sutra we're going to talk about today, Paticca-samuppada, the dependent origination, or the volition and inertia that leads to rebirth or rebecoming, which is the correct translation, not rebirth, not reincarnation. The Buddha didn't talk about helping you de-stress. He didn't talk about helping his students lose weight. He didn't talk about helping his students become better at business. He didn't talk about helping his students have more harmonious relationships at home. As far as he was concerned, those that wish to realize the ultimate truth, he could show them the path and the method to get there, not based on a theory, which is a sutra we'll encounter in the future, which I've just listened to recently. It's a wonderful sutra. You'll enjoy it a lot. But based on his own experience of searching for that and realizing that himself. Okay? So that then begs the question, is there any point in us, we who have not chosen to enter the homeless life or become bhikkhus or bhikkhuinis, female or bhikkhu, and give up everything to realize this ultimate truth? Perhaps we should choose another path. And in fact, the discussion that I had with this person this week was exactly that. They asked me, well, you know, you are who you are, and you were chose the Buddhist path, and you were ordained into Zen, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But how did you get there? Why did you choose that? So I related to him the story of my search, and I thought I would review that. I mentioned that once before very briefly, but I think it's very pertinent to what we're going to discuss today. And I think it's actually very pertinent for everybody in their life. So around the age of 7,
I came to the thought that the world around me is not reality in itself, and things are not what they seem.
And I had certain experiences, altered states, that confirmed that. So I started searching for what was real. Every time my parents spoke to me, I felt like they were misleading me. And so very soon after that, I encountered my teacher, who himself was quite confused at why a seven-year-old would show up at his front door asking to be taught something Buddhist. But we started a relationship. And in time, at the age of 12, I encountered the Tao Te Ching, which was the Book of Life by Lao Tzu, Taoism. And I fell head over heels into Taoist thought. I loved it. It was for me, it was like running through a field of flowers. And my teacher said, go study Taoism. I said, but won't that conflict with our study? No, just go study. If you have questions, you could ask me. So I went into Taoism deeply. I met a Taoist priest. We talked about things. I practiced Qigong even at that young. I got very involved with it. But in time, I somehow came back and spent more time. I mean, I was always seeing my Buddhist master, but I spent more time with him. Then in university, I was exposed before, but I became very enamored with Native American studies. And I went to for a homestay with the Navajo and lived on the reservation and had the fortune or the karma to meet a Native American shaman and became an apprentice to his work. And of course, before that happened, I asked my teacher, can I do this or will this conflict with our Buddhist studies? He said, no, go, 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 go. It was almost like he was saying, go out, get out of my door, go do something else. And I went and I did that. And I love that. And I reveled in that. And I love being out. I mean, some of the feelings and experiences I had, it were just, there are no words to express when you're in the desert all alone and things start to happen like that. And then soon after that, I had the opportunity to apprentice and live with an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, Kabbalist, who was a real Kabbalist. And we really spent every day together going deep into the Zohar and the Sefer Yetzirah, where there are two mystical books that, according to Jewish tradition, you're not even supposed to begin studying till you're 40 years old, otherwise you go crazy. And again, I felt tremendous affinity to that. Coming from a Jewish family, it was almost like second nature. And again, I asked my teacher, wouldn't this conflict with our Buddhist practice? And he goes, no, not at all. Go be a Kabbalist.
My teacher and I,
we were always in touch. We always spoke by phone. We always wrote. We always met up. Ended up coming back for deeper, more intense training. And in the end, I finally said to him one day, well, I think this is it. I think I've decided I'm going to do this with you to the very end. And he goes, oh, really? Well, what about Taoism? What about Kabbalah? What about Native American shamanism? And I said, they're all lovely, but this is it. And he asked me, well, why did you arrive at that? And this is the point of why I'm raising this today. And this is what came up in the conversation with this person earlier this week, he's Italian from Sicily and comes from a Catholic background, but he's kind of let that go. He's a very spiritual inclined person, but they're looking now for a way to go. And the reason the conversation came up is he recently saw the movie, The Little Buddha by Bertolucci, and was smitten by the whole movie. And he was just calling, trying to get more and more. The reason is that Native American shamanism and Jewish Kabbalah and Taoism all had wonderfully beautiful, nourishing, and I believe effective paths and methods towards arriving at a true picture of reality, as perhaps many other traditions that I did not experiment with have as well. But what seemed to me to be very clear was that in order to truly go into the very depths and get the results from Taoism, I had to completely immerse myself into Chinese culture, which I've done anyways. As you know, I'm a doctor of Chinese medicine. And so Chinese culture to me is really very, very much my heart. But I could see the Taoist path would require a tremendous absorption of the essence of what it was to be Chinese and Chinese culture to get to the real truth. Similarly, in the Native American path, I saw wonderful things, amazing things, but I saw how it would require me to completely immerse myself and accept and adopt and become Native American to get to that path. And similarly, in Jewish Kabbalah, I saw wondrous, amazing things, but it would require me to completely dive into becoming Jewish in the complete essence of the philosophical and real deeper meaning, metaphysical aspects of it to get to the final result. And what I saw with the Dharma was this direct path, simple to the source, required nothing else. I didn't have to become Indian. I didn't have to become Chinese. I didn't have to become Jewish. I didn't have to become Native American. I didn't have to. Buddha offered a teaching. They said, here it is. Practice it. It will take you to the end because I've done it. I've realized it. How long will it take you? Well, that's your karma. But here is a real thing. You don't need to be anything. And he accepted women, and he accepted men, and he accepted untouchables, and he accepted Brahmins. It was for everybody. Now, my teacher summed that up in his famous saying that I've said here before. Where truth is, self is not. Where self is, truth is not. And the truth is available to everybody, but not everybody's ready for the truth. And that was his way of summing up that this is a method that doesn't need any fancy externalities to it. It needs just devotion and commitment to the
practice.
In fact, the Buddha himself, in one of the sutras we actually reviewed here, I believe it was the Satipatthana Sutta, mentioned that ceremony and observances can become obstacles towards realization. Do you recall that? The Buddha himself is saying ceremonies and ritual become obstacles to realization. What does that say about all the ceremonies and rituals that are accompanying all the various Buddhist, in quotation marks, schools around the world? Does it say they're wrong? I don't want to judge them. I don't want to make it a right or a wrong. It just says they're not necessary and they could actually become an impediment. So why this monologue today? If we understand this, the Buddha is offering what he believes, what he says he's experienced, a method towards complete realization for the one looking for complete realization. Where does that leave us who have not yet made that commitment to leaving our homes, leaving families, leaving relationships, going for the ultimate golden ring? First question. So the story of my journey from 7 till my early 20s when I was ordained, all these different methods offered also ways to get that golden ring. But the Dhamma offered us a direct, simple path to arrive at it that wouldn't necessarily be limited only to those that want the golden ring, but one could have benefits along the way. So the question then arises, if the method itself has been offered to us as a method for complete realization, and the suttas, as you read them, as I'm sure you've read already, are being offered to the students, to the bhikkhus, as methods for complete release, where does that leave the rest who are not yet ready for a complete release, but want to understand why even look at Buddhist practices? Do you follow my reasoning?
Yeah.
So I throw it out there. You know, I'm telling a person, well, this was offered for complete realization, which in order to achieve, you have to leave everything that's familiar. Why would anybody say, well, yeah, I'm going to study that? No, you can't buy that Ferrari. You can't live in Beverly Hills. No, you can't go and shop on Rodeo Drive. No, you can't take a vacation to South America. You have to leave everything and just wear robes and have a bowl. You don't eat what's not given to you. You don't ask for a place to sleep. You sleep wherever you are. If that is what's offered, then everybody says, well, who's going to want to live that way in our world today? And in fact, who wanted to live that way in the world of the Buddha? As usual, I probably confused a few of you where I'm going with all this. If we look at everything that's offered today as Buddhist studies, whether it be Tibetan studies or Chinese studies or Japanese studies or Vietnamese studies or Chinese studies or secular Buddhist studies, which are now big all over the world, Vipassana, mindfulness, this kind of thing. That's what I put under secular studies.
What are they saying?
Of what we're discussing, of what was the original intent of the Buddha and what are they offering us now? They're just saying, I'm offering you Buddhist teachings. But wait a second. If the intentions of the Buddha were for complete release and complete extinguishing, how do we extract, how do we know what we extract is something that has value if we're not heading that direction? We're just wanting something that will help us in our life. Follow?
Yeah.
Okay. So I throw out the question to you, why even bother with these kind of studies? Why bother listening to this discourse? Why tune in every Sunday to hear me talk? I'd like you guys to talk more, but I know I talk a lot, so I apologize for that. But anyways, what's the point of it? And this is, I'm throwing it out there. Why do it? Kat, why are you here? Why are you listening to this? What do you want in one sentence?
One sentence, huh?
Mm-hmm.
To learn more about Buddhism and to be closer to my inner self, regardless of what surrounds me.
Okay. Quinn, one sentence. Why are you here?
Just to understand myself and the world better, just to be at peace with everything.
Okay, good. Shwan, you've joined us today. You're in the hot seat. First, you're the newbie. Why are you here?
Well, my family has always been Buddhism, and just watching my grandmother growing up and, you know, chanting and everything. And I'm Chinese. So just to kind of, just to listen and learn for today. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that one sentence?
Yeah, that worked.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Sam?
I want to be liberated.
Okay.
You want to be?
Liberated.
Oh.
Okay. Johnny?
Lots of things.
I want to develop my resolve in understanding myself more and absorbing what's around me with a tranquil mind.
Okay. Fantastic. So we can all agree that none of us are here to extinguish our karma yet, right?
No way.
Okay, so we can all agree on that, right? So if we can all agree on the fact that none of us, Sam is getting close to extinguishing, but I think her liberated wasn't quite all the way, was it, Sam?
I've made so many progresses, Orin, having been with you for so long, there's so many, liberation of many things.
Okay.
Okay. You know?
Yeah, okay. We don't have to go, no, don't want to force anything. So we're not here to achieve nirvana, although all of us are not objecting to nirvana at some point, but that's not our goal right today. So if we're clear we're not here to achieve nirvana, then how do we interpret, how do we read and understand what it is the Dhamma is trying to teach us, if we presume, as I do, that the Buddha was very clearly saying, and I encourage you to read this, and I don't to make up your own minds, your own interpretations as you read it yourself, but from my point of view, at least having read these things many times and now reading them again, it's very clear to me the Buddha was teaching for us to reach nirvana. He wasn't teaching us for anything else, any other purpose. Now, in some of the suttas, it is mentioned that there are different stages of students. Some are stream enterers, we get it, and we begin, and then some are accomplished, some are more accomplished, some don't ever begin. It's also acknowledged that if one doesn't have the karma, or kama in Pali, it's without the R, to even hear the Dharma, then they're not going to even be interested in something like this. Like, why would I spend my Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon listening to something like this? So if we understand that we are not yet ready for nirvana, at the same time we have the karma to hear these things, where does that put us on the scale of understanding what is being taught in the suttas? Everybody follow me?
Yeah.
Does this seem relevant to you all?
Yeah.
I hope so, because this is the nuts and bolts of it. Now, there is the religious side of Buddhism, as Xuan, you saw in your family, and I was very much exposed to in my teaching over the years in China and Tibet and in Japan. That's not something we're dealing with here right now. That's something if someone wants to be part of, that's great. But someone can be a Catholic and be Buddhist and be a Jew and be a Buddha. Buddha didn't teach religion at all. It was very clear, it's very clear that the religion called Buddhism, or actually I call them the many religions called Buddhism, because each one, each culture has its own version, were created afterwards. In fact, the Buddha was almost a rebel against the religiosity of Hinduism at his of his time, in India at his time. And there's a lot of evidence to that. But when we look at the teachings, we see that there are things that are helpful. So now, if we want to get those things and make them real for us, I propose that it's very important that we understand, first of all, what their intention was. Well, their intention was nirvana, right? Nibbana. Well, we understand we're not going to nirvana, so okay, we're not saying that's not for us, we're just saying that intention, initial intention, was is not where we want with it. So then we have to look at and say, okay, what can we take from this technology, this method, this teaching that the person called the Buddha offered us and to help us in our lives?